Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Decade Project. I'm your host, Blake Howard. This is a One Heat Minute Productions Patreon early look podcast where we look back 10 years into our rear view to see the movies that are still hanging around. The movies that are like had a huge influence in steering cinema one way or the other. Or, in the case of today, a film that is just so amazing that it is an absolute pleasure to be reminded of how amazing it is and was in 2015. I'm joined by my friend. They are the head of editorial for Letterboxd. Heard of it? What are your four faves? Whip them out. If you're my freaky, stupid friend, Brian, you've got Aladdin, the Will Smith one. You've got Yes Men by Jim Carrey. He's like, I've got a Jim Carrey, I've got a Star Wars, I've got a Disney. I'm like, okay, like that's a normal you're a normal human being, and they're all the worst.
Guy Ritchie's Aladdin.
The worst choice of all time. I'm of course joined by Mitchell Beaupre, friend of the show. Mitchell, thank you so much for being back on the deck.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Excited to talk about Yes Man, the movie that I picked for the Decade Project.
No, he did not pick Yes Man. He picked Christian Petzold's Phoenix. Take a listen to this beautiful little elliptical trailer, and then we'll come back and talk all about it.
Wir haben sie für tot gehalten. Es ist auch von Vorteil, ein anderes Gesicht zu haben.
Es ist so ein Wunder, dass du überlebt hast. Ich suche meinen Mann.
Where are the girls?
Bin ich bei dir?
Wir können Geld verdienen, viel Geld. Sie sehen jemanden sehr ähnlich.
Wem?
Meiner Frau.
Vielleicht lebt sie ja noch.
Sie ist tot.
Nelly hat ihre Haare mal gefärbt.
Nelly hat das Bild sehr gemocht.
Sind das Nellys Sachen?
Hast du?
Jetzt hat er mich wieder zu Nelly gemacht. Ich bin manchmal richtig eifersüchtig auf mich. Ich will das nicht mit Nelly. Sie sind hier gewesen an dem Tag, als Nanny verhaftet wurde?
Wer sagt das? Nächste Woche lassen wir Nanny zurückkommen.
Okay, Mitchell. So, I'm not sure how much, obviously, because it's in German that people are going to have any clue of what the hell is going on. So let's just set the scene. It is in the immediate wake of World War II. We are back in Berlin. Writer-director Christian Petzold, and who co-wrote with Haron Faruqi and Hubert Montelli. After surviving Auschwitz, a former cabaret singer has her disfigured face reconstructed, and she returns to her war-ravaged hometown to seek out her husband, who may or may not have betrayed her to the Nazis. Star of this movie is Nina Hoss, who is unbelievable. Real anchor of the movie, her best friend who rescues her and brings her to this reconstructive clinic, Lena Winter, played by Nina Kusendorf, who's incredible, and her husband, the very slippery Johnny Lenz, played by Ronald Zerfeld, are the sort of three core, you know, the trinity of this movie. Why did you pick Phoenix for our chat today?
Yeah, Phoenix. It is. I mean, it's my favorite movie of this year. Of 2015 is when it came out in the States. I think internationally. I think it played like some festival
circuit. There were some festivals
in 2014.
It's one of those ones that bridged both. But it's a 2015 movie, truly.
But yeah, so it was and still is my favorite movie of the year. I hadn't actually seen it probably since it came out, and rewatching it for this, I immediately was like, okay, yeah, like sometimes even movies that you love, that you still love, it's like, all right, well maybe I would give the edge to Creed now as my number one or whatever. But watching it again, especially when the ending hits, it's like, oh, this is not only, my favorite of the year, it's one of the best movies I've ever seen. I love Christian Petzold. I had seen some of his work before this. He had done this was his sixth movie with Nina Haas. But this is the one for me that really, like, I was interested in his work, but this one really established him as, I think, one of our like most interesting filmmakers, one of our best filmmakers, one of our like most slippery filmmakers. He just tackles things in this way that they feel slightly left of like our living, breathing world, but still so rooted in emotion, and in the real sort of pathos of what we're going through as human beings. And I think this one, and everything he's done since this one, has just like absolutely blown me away. He did was that Transit was the one after this,
yes.
And then Undine, and then A Fire, which came out like 2 years ago. And those all, I think, are tremendous.
I'm annoyed because I think Barbara was my first, which is 2012.
Phoenix, the one right before Phoenix.
Right before I saw Phoenix, Transit I saw Undine. I haven't seen A Fire, and there's now one called Mirrors Number 3, which I haven't seen.
It's doing the festival circuit right now. It hasn't gotten like general release yet, but I'm very excited for that one as well.
Yeah, I'm keen. I really want to get back into him. And I just was like thrilled to be reminded how good Nina Haas is. Holy hell. Like, this is it's a movie about like picking up the pieces of your life and this reconstructive surgery that Nina Haas's character, Nellie, is having to battle with, which is that she doesn't quite look like herself. They've done their best to kind of reconstruct her face and make her look and feel normal after experiencing torture at the hands of the Nazis in Auschwitz. She comes back and survives, and she doesn't look like herself. She doesn't feel like herself. And it's this, without spoiling anything, I mean, sorry, let me just, before we get into this, the reaction for this movie was that it was overwhelmingly one of the best foreign language films of the year for many different, both online or localized film societies or, groups of critics. It was the best movie of the year. Nina Haas, Christian Petzold were said to be the best of the year for many, many like international competitions, not just only in foreign language, but that year had a huge impact then, still has some of the most beautifully written and amazing reviews you'll ever go back. If you just want to go into Rotten Tomatoes or hit on Letterboxd, the Letterboxd reviews are fun, but most definitely the full reviews from all of these great critics are really, really special. So go back. And part of it is because Nellie's unrecognizable when she comes back, and intentionally so. It's because they didn't want to like fudge who she originally looked like. She doesn't quite look the same. And I just think that Nina Haas's performance here, because she's there and Johnny discovers her, but really her friend Lena is trying to get her the reparations that they need to start a new life and get the hell out of Berlin. Like, how can you go back home? How can you go back to Berlin? How can you go back to a cabaret club and want to be in a club and want to be a singer and want to perform after all of the trauma that you faced in that whole time? It's like, I want to start fresh. And Nina Kusendorf, Lena, is asking Nellie, like, let's use the reparations that we're going to be paid for our experience and let's go to Palestine.
Yeah.
Unintentionally extremely prescient. Like, let's go to Palestine. Let's go over there. Let's get the hell out of here. Or let's go to Tel Aviv. Let's get the hell out of this. And Nellie can't help but try and find her husband, because the memory of him was so essential in keeping her motivated to stay alive under the most horrific of circumstances and disfigurement. And watching this dance where Johnny doesn't seem to believe that it is Nelly, that it's just some lady who looks like her, so he can then benefit from getting her reparations and sharing in the spoils. But there's a huge question mark over how did this guy not get killed? How did he stay out of jail and imprisonment? Did he have a hand in Nelly getting captured because she was hidden prior to this? And I love that Christian Petzold just will not give you a straight answer in this whole movie. He just refuses, and it's infuriating in the best possible way. And man alive, the emotions that Nina Hoss conveys through this experience, and so oblique. Like, it's not, nothing's easy to deal with. And I was just a complete, and also shout out for people like you and I who are physical media heads and get packages of films to review. When you see 1 hour and 38 minutes, I was like, oh, Mitchell and Christian, thank you. A really amazing story can be told in an hour and a half. And yeah, I was just completely blown away. Just blown away again and again.
Yeah, there's not an ounce of fat like on this movie at all. There's not a single scene that feels like it's extraneous to what we're seeing. Everything feels essential. And I love to what you were talking about there. Like, I love all of the many different threads of ambiguity like in the movie. There's not any big like exposition kind of anything explain, like having characters explain like what their motivation is. So we're watching Nelly is, when Johnny first sees her, he doesn't recognize her, and that kind of like devastates her, because she, as you mentioned, there's a really moving scene where she talks about how the knowledge that she's going to get back to Johnny is kind of the motivator that pushed her through surviving the camps at all, was this idea that she'll get out and she'll be able to connect with her one true love again. And she finally gets out and she doesn't recognize herself. She doesn't know who she is anymore. She's walking around post-war Berlin, and the set design in the movie is extraordinary. It's rubble everywhere around them in the city. So you're seeing the city kind of in disarray and trying to pick up the pieces of itself. The name of the movie, Phoenix, is also the name of the club where Johnny is working at. And that obviously has its own symbolism for rising, you know, from the ashes, which is what Berlin's trying to do, which is what Nelly's trying to do. And when he doesn't recognize her, he sees her, they make eye contact, and he just walks right by. It like completely unmoors her from the drive that she was going to, that she had to keep going. And then he clocks that, oh, she looks kind of like, this woman looks kind of like Nelly, which is such a fascinating element of it, where it's like he recognizes that she looks enough like her to pass as her, but is so convinced that she had to have died because she went away. She went to the camps. And so she just had to have died. There's no way that this woman is back alive. And then he has a scheme to try to pass her off as his presumed dead wife to get, like you were saying, get the reparations that she is owed. And that would go to him. They would split the money, go their separate ways. And so he's trying to benefit off of the death of this woman who he is now trying to pass off as his wife. And it's so fascinating because you're seeing him then, the crux of the movie is the two of them going through this little dance, as you said, of him trying to get her to walk like herself, to talk like herself, to write. You know, he has her go through and she does all this handwriting to try and match the handwriting of Nelly. And it's this that woman.
That handwriting scene when she writes like herself instantly without trying, and he looks at her. It's just one of those moments that it's like, how are you not?
Why didn't this click to you?
How is this not clicking for you, Johnny? How could it possibly not? And also the big caveat is that Johnny correctly assumes that people who are coming back from the camps, who are arriving back in Berlin, usually are horribly disfigured.
Yeah.
In the sort of exit from those camps, the survivors were like burned and when we arrive with Nellie at the beginning of the movie, her face is wrapped in bandages. She's going for emergency reconstructive surgery. And so that's become, I guess, the sort of like the reemergence du jour, if you like. People are coming back into town and they're horribly disfigured. They're different. And then they come back and their family's there. And it's only Lena, who's Nellie's best mate, who's basically trying to reassemble their friend group when so many people had died in the war or were Nazis. She's like, they died or they were Nazis. And so we don't talk to them anymore. And so when he sees this woman who is recovered and put back together and looks enough like his wife, but is different, there is that kind of like, you get the suspension of disbelief, but like, as all these things are mounting, as you said, it's like, it leads to the climactic moments of the movie and yeah, it just knocks you sideways. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and you're kind of like you're waiting for the ball to drop, right? Like the whole movie, you're waiting for the reality to come, and like what happens in a lot of Christian Petzold's movies, it just develops in ways that you never would have expected. And I love, like, he intricately weaves in these little like red herrings. There's this whole thing where she gets a gun and you think the gun's gonna have some sort of involvement. The gun ends up having nothing to do with anything, really. Yeah. And like he loves playing in the space of genre, and this is very like, you know, World War II. Like, it feels like a thriller, but it is so much more just like a character study, and this really like lyrical fable in the way that like he aesthetically builds it, that I love a lot. And I just love, I always love movies about that kind of take this theme of plastic surgery or kind of reconstructing the body and seeing what it, a movie like John Frankenheimer Seconds is one of my all time favorite movies. Eyes Without a Face, the French film from the 60s, I love. The Face of Another, the Japanese film also from the 60s, I love. That all kind of play in that space of,
all the way up to another melodrama, The Skin I Live In, which is,
Yeah. Pedro Almodovar's movie, which is incredible. And like, so I love that externalizing of like conflict of identity with the body and with how you see yourself. And if you can still be yourself, or in a case of a movie like Seconds, like trying to change the body to change who you are internally and psychologically, and discovering that you can't change that. But then in Phoenix, it's literalizing this idea of her after the horrific trauma that she experienced in Auschwitz, like trying to build herself back into herself, basically. And I just find that really fascinating. And I find Nina Haas's performance is so incredibly nuanced. It's so internalized, but working so much with her body as well, and the way that you see her kind of like, the more that she is trying to be Johnny's facade of Nellie, the more she's becoming separated from who she actually is. Like, she's, the more she's trying to fit that mold, the less she's getting in touch with herself, because she's trying to fit this like fabrication, and she's trying to, and this is the whole other kind of thing with the movie, is she's trying to deny the truth of what happened and deny, you know, what seems to be pointing and blaring red lights at her, what her husband did, which is what all of Germany is trying to do. And we see it with so many of these periphery characters like Johnny, or like that friend group, these people who are trying to ignore what horrors happen in Germany and ignore their complacency and their, you know, their contributions to what happened, how much they sat by and let things happen. She, you know, she connects with people who, as she's passing herself off as Nellie, who feel guilt over seeing her getting taken away, but they didn't do anything about it. They lived with that. And now this person's coming back in as this living reminder of what happened in a country that to this day actively tries to ignore and forget about that, you know, their complacency within that.
It's a strange shift, isn't it? The parent who raised you needs some help, and you want to be there. With Care.com, you don't have to do it alone. Whether you're clear on the kind of care your aging loved one needs or still figuring it out, we've got support. Find background-checked in-home senior caregivers for anything from companionship to dementia care, or browse senior living communities, read reviews, even schedule a tour. plus access to safety checks to help with your peace of mind. Still not sure what's best? Our senior care advisors, who are all master's level social workers, can help you build a plan. For a limited time, use the code LISTEN20 for 20% off your initial care.com subscription. That's LISTEN20, all one word, good for 20% off. Start your senior care journey with confidence.
It's really a beautifully well-told story because, as you said, there's something about this, like both literal and metaphorical reconstruction that's happening, that you can't, no matter how much you put the lipstick on or you put the nice dress.
Yeah.
You're different. Like, it's different. Yeah. You can't put this pig in silk. It's different. You know, like, it's like, even the way that Phoenix, the club, is set up, it's like one remaining building that's been dressed to the nines that feels like still like a level of, I don't know, like early to mid 1920s opulence, you know, roaring 20s kind of like free love-ish, you know, the adjacent burlesque, all those beautiful cultural phenomena that just were like suffocated to death in both in the rise of Nazism and fascism and all those things that happened. But the city can't keep up with like cleanup. Like, it's not cleaning up. It's just like, well, we're just going to, this rubble used to be a 5-story apartment building and people used to live there and this and that. And people who are who are returning are coming back to see these basically bombed out sites where they used to live, where their entire life was there. And it's like, the rebuilding, you can do like a little aesthetic rebuild, but the rebuilding and the reconstruction it takes time. And you're not the same. It's not the same. It's not the same ever again. And I just love his ability to tell a really true feeling experiential story of grief and trauma and like contending with the worst possible thing that you could imagine and all these beautiful allegorical layers that he puts on top. And it's just so effortless. It's like, he's not trying. That's what's sort of sneaky great about him. It doesn't feel like he's trying, but you know that like everything's perfectly deliberate and but he's just navigating it so great. And man alive, as you see the question mark rising in Johnny about, is this actually Nelly? The movie just gets better and better and better. There's a scene in the movie where Nelly and Johnny, as part of this, he's like, I want you to go back. He's like, oh, you can go back to this house because this is one of the last places that Nelly stayed. And so in this moment, he's thinking that Nina Hoss's Nelly is not Nelly. And so she goes back to this house and the matron of that house recognizes her and sort of immediately clocks that it's Nelly. And then Nelly starts asking her questions and Johnny can't hear what they're saying. He's just watching their reactions. And she's just asking information. What do you mean my husband came right after? What do you mean? He wasn't locked up. He wasn't this. And she walks to where she was hiding in a boat shed. And there's just moments she's like, she walks over to the wall and immediately finds the hiding spot from where she was hiding for a time and goes, and Johnny doesn't see her clock that spot immediately. And he walks out there and she goes, I imagine it would be very cold in winter in here. And I just remember being like, oh my God, I don't know if I can keep going. This movie is grueling. It's grueling emotionally. It's so raw and oh God, she's good. So good.
Yeah. It's such a remarkable performance, and like it is this woman who's had everything taken from her and trying to build herself back up, and she's trying to reconstruct what she was before, but like you were saying a bit ago, like there's no going back, there's no going back, and so you have to become this new thing, and that's what her friend is trying to move out of here, but she's so caught in this in this old world of Johnny, and like that's the thing. And I love the like the ambiguity too. I remember the first time that I watched the movie thinking like, how much is this woman just devoted to him, ignoring all these signs, or how much is she like, is she going along with this because she knows that he did it and she wants some sort of revenge, especially as they're like seeding in some of these thriller elements and everything. And I just love that you said Petzold, his direction is really effortless. And I think that was a really good word because it does feel like the movie feels so fluid. It doesn't feel like it's signposting anything, but there are these incredible signposts of what this world is and who this woman is. There's this other scene that I love where that's another one of kind of the key scenes of things kind of falling into place where he's talking about it's soon before he's going to start reintroducing her to their old friends and everything. And he talks to her about how when you meet them, they're going to ask what it was like in the camps and you're going to have to come up with a story. And so you need to have a story. You need to have something to say. And she starts talking about, and it's the one time in the entire movie that we see her talk about any kind of her experience in the camps, and she talks about what it was like there and just how horrific it was. And it's so unbearable to even hear her speak about it because she's speaking from such a place of truth that nobody else could ever,
Yeah,
capture.
sitting on steel beams naked, searching through the clothes from all the hidden things, and it's in the middle of winter. And Johnny's like, he doesn't even know what to do with that information.
Exactly. The
He's
way he
just.
responds is such a nothing kind of, intentionally a nothing kind of response. He just is like, he has no idea what to do with that. And in the back of his head, he knows that, other people experience that and he didn't have to experience that. And
Yeah.
now he just has to live with that. And it's him and a whole country that are just trying to ignore that that happened right there where they
Yeah.
live.
It's and I think that's you touched on something which is like you don't really ever know why she won't let go. And Petzold does this beautiful thing where like he makes Johnny so insufferable and such a jerk and such a sign, a signal to be like, get the hell out of here. This guy did it. And then he does a beautiful and kind of lyrical dance and takes him back. And you're like, I don't know, I'm not sure. There's a lot of ambiguity. And as the movie is on rails and she's dealing with grief, and if you haven't seen this movie, I'm just gonna say for the next like I'm gonna try and do it in like 30 seconds. Just stop listening for 30 seconds. Lena, who is her friend, kills herself because she has finally connected back with Nellie. She has one of her remaining best friends who's gone through this horrific thing. Lena has escaped it, but only by pure luck. She's gotten her back and she's resurrected her, if you like, and she just wants to escape. And when she sees that people, rightly or wrongly so, want to restore their life to before, and she feels like you can't, she kills herself. And so this is happening towards the crescendo of the movie, and it's just an ultimate devastation, and it doesn't really, you don't sort of see it immediately register on Nellie. So once Nellie has dealt with that, she is still participating in this facade with Johnny. She's still participating in this thing. And in that facade, when he reintroduces her and she comes back on a train, and it's so silly because you've seen them rehearse this and you see her hook up with her friends again and she's like, oh, I'd really just want to sing. It's the first time that you hear her voice, and it starts out like maybe she's lost the ability to
It's
even
so
do this.
soft and shaky and kind of hollow.
And then as it builds and she starts to hit the notes, the crushing realization seems to, for me, this is the way that I read it, hits Johnny in such a way, and it emboldens her in a way. And in that moment, it doesn't feel like she's desperate to reconnect. It feels like there's this moment of defiance that I still can sing after everything that I went through. And it doesn't It's not shot in this exultant way. It's shot so sparsely. It's just so nakedly composed. And this happens. And then it hits. And you're just like, I could watch that. I could immediately, beautifully sell on physical media. Top menu button. Play movie again.
Play it back.
Play it back. Like, it just... And I remember that was my experience in the theater. Like, I saw it at a festival screening, was completely blown away at the time. People walk out of that screening just so, like, overwhelmed. And then sort of letting it slip away. I'd forgotten about it. And then I watched it again in preparation for this. And I was like, oh, man, I'm so glad. Like, you know, I'm so glad that this movie exists. It's terrific. And it feels like it's even having a bigger dialogue right now with everything that's happening in 25 than it was in 2015.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It really is like fascinating to watch now compared to 2015 and just how much it examines not only like obviously the Israel-Palestine of it all is really pointed now too. But even just outside of that, the idea of how much we are complicit in horrific things that happen, how easy it is to not say anything when things are happening, especially if you're somebody who can kind of protect yourself by being silent and sacrificing other people. It really feels even more potent now. That the ending, as you were speaking to it, it really is, I think, one of the greatest endings like in cinema history. And it is so like the whole movie, he's not hammering it in, Petzold. It's a build told in her voice, but also just in the glances shared between Nelly and Johnny. And the whole movie, you see, because she has this past as this cabaret singer, you see the teases of like people asking her to sing again. Her friend really wants her to sing multiple times throughout, and she never does it. And you question, like, is she ever going to? Is she even able to? Like, has there been damage done through the surgeries and whatever was inflicted upon her in the camps that she would even be able to now? And when she starts singing, like you were saying, when she starts singing, it feels like, oh, she can't. It's just not there anymore. And then it just builds and builds. And it's a literalization of her finding her voice again, which she has been incapable of doing the entire movie. And when she finds it, that's when she finally has that strength. And she has finally risen, you know, from these ashes, and she is herself again. And she has the strength then to walk away from Johnny. And then the movie fucking ends.
I love that that's the read, because like I feel like for a really beautifully and deftly ambiguous movie, the glances between her and Johnny and him, what must be like a cold bucket of water realization that is like welling in him.
Incredible face acting as he's watching her.
He's just playing the piano and face acting, and you're just like, oh, he knows now how she'll never speak to him again. And he has to live with himself.
Yeah.
And it was her, that she did defy the impossible, that she did come back. And he even thinks, he's very dismissive. He's just like, oh, I don't want to sing. Oh, why is she singing? Oh, God. And so he's like, why is she singing? Why is this Nelly avatar singing? Why is she doing that? Why is she making it hard? Because people know Nelly's voice.
And you can see his face when she starts, and it's so cracking, and it's just nothing there. It's so flat, and you can see him like almost cringing at it, like almost like wanting to stop playing because it's so uncomfortable. And then the gears start turning as she's picking it up, and he starts recognizing it. It's remarkable.
So good. Well, 10 years later, we touched on a little bit before, it feels extremely prescient, but Nina Hoss is like, she's had an amazing like career of just consistently performing for many, many years. 2022 was her last big movie. She was in Tar. And in 2014, she had the double. So 2014-15, she had the double of Phoenix and A Most Wanted Man, which with Philip Seymour Hoffman, which she was excellent in. And Barbara is the other big one from 2012. But she's done some like TV series stuff. And she's done like little movies here and there, but you know, if there was any justice in the world, in my mind, she would just be she would be a ubiquitous actor internationally. She's got such a profound talent that, yeah, she just blew me away like a million in this movie. And yeah, I can't believe it, how good she was.
Yeah, it's a legendary performance, and it is one of the, I love Christian Petzold so much. Fascinating, frustrating. I don't even know if they've spoken, if there's like a particular reason for this, but they did six movies together and Phoenix was the last one, and they haven't worked together since then. And he's kind of moved on. He's been doing his last four movies now have all been with Paula Beer. Yeah. And he did a couple with Franz Rogowski as well, who's one of my favorite actors. And Paula Beer is incredible in the movies that she's in as well. But it's very interesting to me and a little bit confusing, a little bit frustrating sometimes that like it just seems like it has shifted because Nina Hoss is absolutely sensational in this. And the two of them just feel like they have like a symbiosis together that is like unparalleled. She is Nina Hoss.
Is there a Christian Petzold box set for us physical media heads that we can get, like a Hoss box?
The Hoss box. I love that. There's not, but there should be like Criterion, somebody get on something, get one of those.
Yeah, like a collaborate,
like their six movies together.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Like there's a imprint box set collaboration, Zhang Yimou and
I was just thinking about that. Yeah, and, yeah, yeah. I was just
and I'm
that.
Like, get the Hoss box, which is just Petzold and Hoss, because but also can you imagine entrusting Nina to do Nelly and getting to that moment,
yeah,
and watching how much she crushes. And then honestly, together as creatives going, I don't know if we'll ever top that. Like, I don't know if there's any greater degree of difficulty that I've given you to deliver on a performance, nor I don't know if we collectively could harmonize and eclipse it. Yeah, it feels like the pressure. It's like, oh God, what do you do with that? It's really
hard. That's
the
thing. Like, I tried looking into like, was there like, is there a Danny Boyle, Ewan McGregor situation where like they like fell out? And like, I couldn't find anything about, you know, Bad Blood or whatever. Like maybe they just were like, we did it. You know, we topped the mountain, and anything after this would be, you know, going would be descending in some kind of way. I don't know. She's absolutely incredible in this. I was watching, there's an interview with the two of them on the Criterion Blu-ray for Phoenix. And they talk about how Nina Hoss, before every scene, and this is like her way of working generally, before every scene, she would like go off on her own for like 30 minutes. And like, you couldn't speak to her for like 30 minutes before coming into a scene. And it just feels like that for Nelly in particular, like that feels like such the right way to go into any scene. It's just being completely isolated for half an hour, just sitting with yourself before having to communicate with anybody. And I just love, if you have anybody listening, if you have the Criterion Blu-ray for this, watch that interview on there. It's really phenomenal hearing them talk just about like the way that they work together. And you just see so clearly like what a perfect union their minds are together.
Yeah. I'm just in awe of it. I'm in awe of the patience, and I'm in awe of the staging, because you know, different filmmakers have such a beautiful sense of like the kind of invisible pressure of putting people in spaces and having them feel like you're claustrophobic or feel like you're there. And I think the spaces in this movie just are reverberant. Like, she stands in the middle of a room and he stages like where you can see it's like usually in wide. That's not, you know, not too many close-ups, or if there's close-ups, they're for very deliberate reasons. But she's just like vibrating. Like, you can just like, it's like you can't take your eyes off her. She's in the space, and the space is always like feeling something different. It's just, I don't know. It's a really, truly, truly, truly incredible piece of work. And I'm kind of in awe of it. And I've forgotten that there is the like deliriously good Criterion Blu-ray. I'm going to have to see if I can pick that up.
It's got one of the coolest covers too. An amazing cover. It's Nelly like shrouded in smoke. It's sick.
Oh, so good. So amazing. Well, Mitch, thank you so much for selecting this movie. Thank you so much for our chat. It's incredible. And I'm, yeah, blown away. If you haven't seen Phoenix in Oz, occasionally Christian Petzold's films pop up on even our free-to-air services, like SBS or ABC. Sometimes we'll put them on, or some of our streaming, you know, streamers, because it had a festival splash and was just so popular. So there's often foreign language films you can find. Otherwise, you can, you know, if you are not the person who's a physical media person, you can definitely rent it or buy it on Apple. It's most readily available there, because I think we had DVDs and Blu-rays out of it, but most of those are out of print now. Otherwise, secure yourself a Blu. But look, thank you so much. Is there anything you want to plug for while this one's going to probably be out in October-ish? Any October-ish highlights coming up from you, Mitchell?
I don't know. I don't know what I'll have going on in October.
So. It's too far ahead, Blake. I don't know.
It is a little bit too far ahead.
Too far ahead. Well, we can follow you on the socials. I'll link to all your stuff, and we'll keep an eye out for you at different things. And also, such a treat to read your great work in the Nice Guys box set. Speaking of,
oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much.
That was one of the most overstuffed collections, with so many great pieces, and yours too. So, man, so great to see you in there, because I know you've been one of the champions, and Letterboxd, I feel like if the Nice Guys 2 ever happens, so much of it is the Letterboxd community's obsession with the Nice Guys.
Give them a special thanks for Letterboxd and the end credits.
So many people's top fours for a terrific movie. But guys, thanks for listening to The Decade Project. We'll catch you on another episode soon.